Voter suppression, alien invasion, saving Europe, and tax exemptions for religious institutions. All that and more on the third episode of the Spectrum News Podcast. I'm Will Fox, your host. I'm joined today by Cameron Tanner, Brian George, Shanna Schultz, and Joseph Fox. Controversy over the 2012 election's voter ID laws. In 2012, there will be 9 states with strict voter ID laws. This will require voters to present a state driver's license or other form of photo ID in order to vote. Republicans tout these laws as a way of preventing voter fraud. However, their Democratic adversaries consider these laws to be acts of voter suppression. And most notably in Pennsylvania, where it was recently discovered that approximately 758,000 of the state's voters, that equates to about 10% of their voting population, lack the necessary ID in order to vote. This came to a head when Pennsylvania Speaker of the House, Mike Turzai, was on record saying that the new voter ID law in Pennsylvania would allow Governor Romney to win Pennsylvania. Shanna, is this a way of preventing voter fraud? Is this just common sense, or is this voter suppression?
I don't think that each state should be able to determine what type of identification is okay, right? So that means that in, like, Texas, you need a birth certificate, like a driver's license, a school ID, and, like, a thumbprint, I don't know. And then in, like, Virginia, you only need, like, a voter registration card. I think that kind of disparity is unfair amongst the state, especially when talking about something as unifying as voting for the president and other members of the federal government.
Joseph, let's narrow in on Pennsylvania. About 10% of the voting population in Pennsylvania lacks the required ID. Should they be barred from voting simply because they don't have this?
So I think we should make sure we're not trying to disenfranchise people. However, having a photo ID, even though I do understand that some underprivileged people do not have them, but it's not that big of a problem for most people. A latest Rasmussen poll actually showed 75% of people across America support voter ID laws, and that includes 52% of the Democrats polled in this as well.
Brian, Joseph's saying that the voters support these ID laws. I have to wonder if the people who don't have the IDs are included in those majorities, but a recent study by the NYU's Brennan Center showed that about 11% of the voting age population lacks those photo IDs, and again, back in Pennsylvania, about 9.2% of those are not registered to vote. Now, based on what you've heard so far, is Joseph more in the correct here? Is this just common sense reform?
You know, the studies show that 25% of African Americans don't have the kind of IDs, and that's from the same Brennan Center study. So, and like it was brought up earlier, claims of voter fraud are not, you know, they're incredibly low, and even some of the claims that are brought forward are not even standing up. You know, you're more likely to be attacked by a shark in the Nevada desert than know someone who committed voter fraud or ever have it affect your life. And so these laws are restricting people to vote based upon something, a problem that does not exist. And so in reality, you know, these are just restricting people to vote for other reasons.
Joseph, to go back to you then, there's not much of a chance that the Republican Party can lose more ground with African American voters, but they may lose ground with minorities as a whole. For example, in Pennsylvania, where we've been speaking, in Pennsylvania specifically, about a fourth of those that lack the IDs reside in that urban area of Philadelphia, which is a Democratic stronghold. Of those, a majority are minorities, a vast majority, and a plurality happen to be African American. How does this affect the image of the Republican Party?
I think the Republican Party has the option there to go about these voter ID laws in a way that doesn't disenfranchise people. Getting these IDs out to people, there are easy ways to do that. So I think they have the option. It depends on how these states go about implementing these laws.
Janet Joseph says that it's just a matter of, can you get the ID? Is it an easy process? Can it go smoothly? But isn't any extra obstacle to voting just a way of making it just that much more difficult to cast a ballot?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a really interesting article written in the New York Times, I think in 2010, about how collectively there was over maybe 50,000 people who came to the polls to vote and then just couldn't, either because they had the wrong ID or because their ID was expired or this, that, and the other. Whatever kind of error prevented them from voting. Like, how many of those people had such a valuable thing to say that they wanted to come to the polls and vote and couldn't because of something like a stupid piece of paper? I mean, all these IDs are like a tax anyways. It seems really suspicious of like state governments to get to make people buy more IDs, right? That's just more money for the government, not some sort of ability to prevent voter fraud.
Cameron, is this a poll tax? Is this like a historical civil rights? I mean, we're heading into deep water here if we start accusing this of being some sort of a poll tax or a Jim Crow law.
Yeah, I think that's a little too far. I think in a lot of states, isn't it the process of just a free ID that the government gives out, I think, right?
In certain situations, Joseph, did you have something you wanted to add on that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's not in theory, I mean, we already require people to go to a station to register to vote. I mean, they could probably just take their picture and print out an ID card in 5 seconds if they wanted to. Now, are all these state governments doing it that way? I'm sure some of them might not be. And we should if we're going to have these ID laws, and I think it goes in hand that we should try to get as many IDs out to registered voters as possible. But calling it a poll tax is just ridiculous. If we give these IDs out for free, we're not stopping anybody from voting.
There are more cases of felons accidentally voting or trying to vote and not being able to, or immigrants who aren't technically citizens yet voting that are considered voter fraud than any sort of like nightmarish situation like we've been talking about that would threaten the integrity of the vote. Now, do I think that there are issues in the American election system? Do I think that there's a possibility for fraud? Yes. Do I agree with the solution of creating some sort of state photo ID requirement? Absolutely not. I think it's fixing an issue that doesn't actually exist, and if we're really serious about this, we need to implement more national reforms, like a national ID, like an independent nonpartisan election commission. All right, that'll do it for our talk on voter ID laws. Coming up next is Yay or Nay, but first, let's take a look at a congressional race to watch in 2012. Keep a close eye out for the race for the U.S. Senate in Massachusetts between Senator Scott Brown and his challenger, Elizabeth Warren. Now, this is a seat that was once held by Teddy Kennedy and was taken by Scott Brown in 2010 during the rise of the Tea Party and the Republican resurgence. Now, Scott Brown was notable because he'd drive around in his pickup truck and campaign, kind of seemed like a down-to-earth man there for the people. Elizabeth Warren is a Harvard law professor and was picked recently to head the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. Now, polls have this race in a dead heat, or as I like to call it, a lively freeze, with Brown just barely ahead in the Real Clear Politics average of polls at about plus 0.2%, basically within the margin of error. Elizabeth Warren recently claimed that she was a Native American, and the reason that she claimed this Native American heritage is because she describes her cheekbones as being high, and because she says she has 1/64th Cherokee in her blood. She was even claimed by Harvard as a Native American when they were promoting diversity in their institution, but anybody who's ever seen Elizabeth Warren knows that she's about as white as peach tea and macaroni pictures. Now, one cool thing about this race is that they both agree to turn down and condemn any help from super PACs. So we have a very organic race, and at least as traditional as you can get in the modern sense. All right, it's time for Yay or Nay, quick questions and quick answers, with our first topic being the Bush tax cuts. Brian, should we let the Bush tax cuts expire, yay or nay?
Yay! Let them expire. We need some money.
Joseph, Bush tax cuts. Let them expire. Yay or nay?
Yay, because economic recessions are the perfect time to stick it to those rich bastards.
Cameron, sarcasm. Bush tax cuts expire. Yay or nay?
I say yay, but there's no sarcasm in that.
Shanna, Bush tax cuts, yay or nay?
I say yay. 2%ers don't need any more tax cuts.
I say nay. These cuts have been in place for a decade now with little effect. It's time to not trim, but grow the bush. Okay.
That don't good.
In the event of an alien invasion, is Obama our best possible president? Shanna, you say...
Nay, everyone knows that Bill Pullman is the best man for the job, as demonstrated in the 1996 documentary Independence Day.
I say nay, Obama looks far too normal. We need someone who the aliens can associate with and feel more comfortable around. For example, Newt Gingrich or Dennis Kucinich. Brian... Obama, the best president for an alien invasion. Yes, yay or nay?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to actually say Obama kind of looks like an alien, so they might be open to communicate with him. He's got kind of that oddly shaped head, you know?
Cameron, yay or nay?
I'm going to say nay, because Herman Cain would do the best job.
Joseph, yay or nay?
Nay. We have so many presidents from U.S. history that do a better job. Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, Ronald
He's in
Reagan,
a wheelchair.
George Washington.
Maybe the aliens are in a wheelchair.
You never know.
The Republican Party of Texas in 2012, its platform reads, "We oppose the teaching of higher order thinking skills, critical thinking skills, and similar programs that are simply a relabeling of outcome-based education." In other words, the Texas GOP and their platform opposes critical thinking, and we all say, starting with Cameron, should we be teaching higher order thinking skills, yay or nay?
Oh my god, yay. Yes. Oh my god, that's retarded.
Ironically speaking.
Joseph, yay or nay?
Oh, yay. Not a doubt. We really need this. Stuff like this really makes it hard for me in Texas to vote. To give any respect to the Republican Party here.
Brian, yay or nay?
Yay. I mean, encouraging deeper thinking. I mean, discouraging deeper thinking, I guess, is just idiotic.
Shanna, yay or nay? Higher order thinking.
Yay. I need these young people to teach me how to do word problems.
And I say nay. Just kidding, yay. McDonald's has been an Olympic sponsor since 1976. But is it time for the Olympics to find a new sponsor, Shanna?
Nay, this is a tradition of teaching Americans of how to carbo load and live healthy.
Brian.
Wait, was...
Yay or nay?
Yay, they...
Should the Olympics find a new sponsor?
Nay, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to be... There's companies just waiting in line to stand up and dish out billions of dollars to support the Olympics. There's nothing wrong with McDonald's money. Sorry.
Joseph, should the Olympics find a new sponsor, yay or nay?
Nay, because having McDonald's as a mascot for the Olympics is hilarious.
Cameron, should the Olympics find a new sponsor, yay or nay?
Nay. Just nay.
I say nay as well. It's a perfect fit. Kind of like Hummer sponsoring Greenpeace conferences, Outback Steakhouse sponsoring PETA, or the Anabolic Prescribers of America sponsoring Lance Armstrong. Coming up next, can a European debt agency save the European Union? But first, another race to watch in 2012.
My race to watch this week is the Texas Senate Republican primary runoff. This is this Texas Senate seat once belonged to Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who is stepping down this year. This race is between Ted Cruz and David Dewhurst. Ted Cruz used to be the Solicitor General for the state of Texas from 2003 to 2008. David Dewhurst, on the other hand, is the current Lieutenant Governor of the state of Texas under Rick Perry. This is an interesting race, even though this is a Republican primary going on right now. But this is an interesting race because David Dewhurst is endorsed by Rick Perry. This has been a very heated race so far, with both these guys slamming attack ads at each other. I always see, in the state, all across Texas, I've been seeing commercials and advertisements on the internet saying that Ted Cruz is a lawyer trying to send Texas jobs over to China, or David Dewhurst secretly working for the UN. But it is interesting because to me, this race represents, if David Dewhurst loses, and this represents a lot of Texans might be, especially conservative Texans, might be shifting away from Rick Perry.
Okay, guys, in 2009, the cracks in the Eurozone were beginning. The European Union demanded that France, Spain, the Irish Republic, and Greece to reduce their budget deficits. Back in 2010, the International Monetary Fund gave 110 billion euros to Greece, 85 billion euros to the Irish Republic, and again in 2011, 109 billion euros to Greece as well. A few weeks ago, a European think tank released a proposal trying to figure out a way to balance the Eurozone crisis and make European economies much more stronger and much more competitive on the global market. With several different planks of how they want to do this, one of the major things they proposed was the invention of the European Debt Agency, which would be jointly and severely guaranteed in all euro-area countries. In normal times, all euro-area members would issue a predefined share of their debt through the European Debt Agency, thus establishing a very liquid market. Let me go ahead and ask Joseph first. Do you think it's wise for the Eurozone to continually stay together, or should countries start to break off and go back to their own currency?
I think it might be best if they find some way to dissolve the Eurozone. Just because I find it's going to be hard for them to agree on. So it's going to be hard for all the countries to agree on something like a European Debt Agency, and that's the only way the Eurozone could keep together. It's going to be in decline if not. A lot of the better off countries like Germany have stated in the past that they don't want to bail out these smaller countries, but these smaller countries like Greece there's a lot of debate in them. There's a lot of resistance to these austerity measures that they need. I think the simple fact of the matter is, with economic cooperation on this scale, eventually these countries are going to have to sacrifice their sovereignty. And until they do that, it's going to be, the Eurozone's going to be in decline. And I just don't see these countries willing to do that.
So, Will, let's talk about the idea of this European Debt Agency. You've kind of heard a few opinions that say, well, the Eurozone is just falling apart already. They just need to disband and think of their own national monetary policies. However, with the invention of the European Debt Agency, that would be able to kind of control the ebb and flow of debt in each of these countries and make more unified monetary policies. Do you think this would be a better solution than allowing the countries to break apart?
Europe is better together than they are separate. They need this financial coordination. They need the stability. This is a positive step forward to them, but I just don't think that they are willing to take the steps necessary to get it done. I think that, unfortunately, egos in some of the European countries, and both the wealthiest powerhouses like Germany to the most needy and the most impoverished, so to speak, and the most in debt like Greece, are just too high. They feel like they're living in a different time. This is Europe, after all. This is the center of the planet, right? This is where everything takes place. No, these countries are falling behind the times, and they need to band together. And yes, they probably need to give up a little bit of their sovereignty to move forward. The CDA is what they need, 100% absolutely. But people like Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, are already on record saying absolutely not, never going to happen. And so I think they're sealing their own fate.
Joe, considering the concept that this proposal brings, in order for the EDA to work, one of the punishments for going into increasing amounts of debt is to give up lots of your sovereignty for the sake of stability that comes from the Eurozone, that comes from the IMF, and so on and so forth. So do you think that an exchange of sovereignty for economic stability is preferable than breaking off and starting your own, or do you still reside with the same position?
I'm not, let me clarify something. I'm not in favor of the Eurozone breaking up. My point of view is a little bit closer to Will's. The European Debt Agency is the way forward, and I think it'd be better for us over here in the United States if the European Union were to stay together. A Europe together is a Europe stronger.
My opinion is that I think these countries are beginning to take more and more necessary steps to alleviate their debt problem. I think that most countries are realizing, especially countries like Spain, that if they can't find a way to pull themselves out of this crisis, that they're going to lose one of their main sources of revenue, which is tourism, and one of the main things that, you know, people love about Europe that aren't from Europe. I think that as the year progresses, we're going to see more of a multilateral participation in how to resolve this crisis. I kind of disagree with most of the panelists by saying that they're too, perhaps egocentric to make these kinds of cuts, because I think historically they have been cutting some of the things that matter the most to their people with the expense of their position in their cabinet as a president, as a chancellor, or whatever it is. I think that they make those necessary decisions even for the sake of losing their own job. And I think that will only increase as the future unfolds.
Coming up in the mix, our weekly blending of politics and religion, should churches still have tax-exempt status in today's day and age?
Okay, one interesting race to look for this election cycle is the Virginia Senate race. Vying for the Republican Party is George Felix Allen, who may sound familiar because he's the son of former NFL head coach George Allen. His Democratic opposition is Timothy Michael Kane, a.k.a. Tim Kaine, who also might sound familiar because he was considered as a possible running mate for Barack Obama in 2008. Tim Kaine was the former governor, and George Allen was actually held the Senate position before Jim Webb did, and now is running for it again. However, the reason that George Allen first lost this position to Jim Webb is he was like leading the polls and everyone loved him until he was accused of using racist epithet when referring to staffers of his opponent, and after being found out to be somewhat of a racist in his rhetoric, lost the election by less than 10,000 votes. Tim Kaine, on the other hand, was the governor of Virginia, then the lieutenant governor of Virginia, and he was also the mayor of Richmond, Virginia. Tim Kaine is a devout Roman Catholic, so personally is against abortion, but he also opposes overturning Roe v. Wade. His political position is that he thinks policymakers should focus on bringing down the number of abortions by reducing teen pregnancy through different types of education, ensuring women's access to health and contraception, and promoting adoption. So it'll be an interesting race between George Allen and Tim Kaine to see who can gather the most votes in November.
All right, everyone, let's move on to our next topic in the mix. Now, for our listeners, you know the mix is our blending of politics and religion. And this week, we're going to be talking about tax exemptions for religious institutions. Now, written in the First Amendment of the Constitution, of course, Congress shall pass no laws respecting the establishment religion or the free exercise thereof. This has been practiced throughout our nation's history, and only one time in 1954 was any standard established by which a religious institution could lose tax exemptions. This was a amendment by Senator Lyndon Baines Johnson to revoke tax exemption of a church if it participates directly in a political campaign. And that's only been used once before. My question to the group today will be, is there a standard, is there any situation that would cause a religious institution to lose its exemption from federal income taxes, from state property taxes, so on and so forth? Now then, I am going to pose to everyone here that there should be a specific standard, and that standard is twofold. These are two things in which a church could lose tax exemption. One is if the institution itself meddles directly in the operations of the government, as happened in the 1970s when the Church of Scientology conducted what was called Operation Snow White, in which 5,000 covert agents infiltrated 136 agencies in the national U.S. government, embassies of foreign governments, and consulates. And what they did was they purged documents that were unflattering to L. Ron Hubbard, their founding, participated in wiretapping and theft. This is one standard by which I say if an institution meddles, they lose the exemption. Second is if the church has members of leadership or clergy that have committed felonies and the institution itself attempts to cover it up or prevent investigation. Again, I point to Scientology in what's called their Sea Organization. In the Sea Organization of Scientology, members sign a billion-year contract, they're subject to long hours with little sleep, and what's basically slave labor, and they're not allowed to have children. And there are examples of when females in the Sea Organization became pregnant and were coerced into getting abortions. So any investigation into these matters has been denied by the Church of Scientology, and so we don't know for sure if the forced abortion claims is true, but we can make a lot of conjecture based on their denial of any sort of investigation. And I point, second, a little bit more sensitive to the Catholic Church and specific dioceses or even specific churches themselves that try to cover up child rape, as was taking place in the 80s, 90s, and early 1000s. And so I want to pose to the group, my two standards are basically if the institution meddles in government or if it tries to cover up felonies. The other standard that's already on the books is if it tries to meddle in a political campaign. I want to toss first to Cameron. I know you're a practicing Catholic, my friend. Do you think that there are any situations? Do you agree with my standard here? Should a diocese or a church lose exemption if they try to cover up child rape, for instance?
To preface, I'd just like to say that I'm not for these kind of certain acts. But it's a hard thing for a Catholic to agree with your stance, I guess, that an archdiocese could lose its tax exemptions, because confession, which is, I'm assuming this is how each priest found out about it, is a very, very strong pillar in the Catholic Church. It's basically, you go to confession, and what you confess is between you, that priest, and God, and no one else. And it's your forgiveness through God and through the priest. But if the priest were to go out and tell his archdiocese, and then tell that archdiocese, tell the government about it, that breaks that complete. That breaks the trust in that kind of institution and that kind of pillar within the Catholic Church. And I think that's where the issue with Catholics get on that. I don't think Catholics think children should be raped or think it should be okay or anything like that. It's a very strong issue.
But Cameron, if a specific church denies an investigation on these sorts of things, should they still be exempt from federal taxes and state taxes, or should they be revoked until they get their act together?
I mean, I don't know how to answer you with that. It's a hard thing to say. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but growing up Catholic, I see where the trouble is with that. So it's a hard thing to really tell you, because I mean, it's a horrible act. I mean, it's horrible. I mean,
I know you think it is, Cameron, and I'm not trying to pushed this on you, but I think this is akin to the kind of emotional attachment that people at Penn State had to football. You know, it's such an ingrained part of our culture. It's so familiar to us that we're willing to put things like child rape to the side to protect an institution.
Now, I think it's a lot different like me than a religion, personally.
I don't know.
I mean, it may not be to some people, but I mean, a religion is much different than a football program or even the top people that are told are pretty. I mean, I'm not even going to go into this because you're previewing my asshole of the week, so.
So the two criteria you put up is, like, I'm going to call them meddling and felonies, right? I think that both of these criteria sound really good on paper. Like, they sound really good. It's like, yeah, obviously, if there's groups committing crimes, they shouldn't get some sort of benefit, like a tax break. But the issue, I think, far exceeds tax exemptions and really comes towards legal recourse. I don't think that taking away institutions like tax exemptions is punishment. I don't think that it's not up to the IRS to punish groups for what their members do. I think that's what legal recourse is. And so I'm hesitant to say that that's anywhere near a good idea because I don't think it does anything for the situation. I would much rather see personal people responsible for the crimes that they commit, right? So in the issue of meddling and the example you gave with Church of Scientology, first of all, who knew that the Church of Scientology people were so sneaky? I always never gave them very much credit.
it was pretty crazy.
But for that example, should all of Church of Scientology be punished? Should they lose tax exemptions in all these places? I mean, it's just like David Koresh. I mean, even though Branch Davidians were a branch of Seventh-day Adventists, should Seventh-day Adventists, like, lose their tax exemptions as well?
Right now, religious organizations fall under the same tax-exempt bracket as charitable organizations. Am I wrong?
You're correct. Under the Internal Revenue Code, religious institutions, nonprofits, 501c3 or whatever it is, get exempt from federal income tax, and in all 50 states, they are exempt from property tax.
Well, here's a problem that I have with your specific points here. I feel that a religious institution tax exemption should not be a given. I think if a religious institution wants tax exemption, they should have to prove that they're providing charity to the general public. I don't think religions themselves should automatically receive just tax exemption as a given. And my problem specifically with your two points is you're putting the burden of proof on the government to deny tax exemption. I think the burden of proof should be on the organizations to prove that they deserve tax exempt. I don't think that it should just be a given, and that the burden of proof should be on the U.S. to deny it to them.
See, I think you're taking an even more extreme approach than I am, because I'm trying to stay as specific as I possibly can, because I do think that there is an important separation, and I think that it is important that Congress not meddle in the affairs of the church. But when individual members or the church itself are infiltrating and affecting the government, when they're violating that pact themselves in the opposite direction, you know, we always think of the government affecting churches. We don't often think of the churches affecting the government in any negative sense. And so I'm trying to keep this as specific as possible as to not discriminate against certain religions. Joseph?
Those two points that you raise are very important. I think Shanna's right in saying that we should prosecute the individual members of the church should be subject to the laws of the land. And I don't think churches are under any illusion of that. If they break laws like the Church of Scientology and the Catholic Church obviously did, and those individual members, and the government has the right, dare I say, duty to prosecute those people and throw them in jail. I don't think that necessarily entails taking away their tax exempt status, because that goes even farther, and it basically says your group's not a religion.
So how would y'all deal with the issue, for example, the Sea Organization, forced abortion, slave labor, and the denial of any sort of investigation? I mean, what do you do? You can bust in there and start arresting members of the Church of Scientology. I think that's even more extreme and far worse than maybe taking. I think this is more of a middle of the road step to try first. So first, you send them a wake up call. You take away their tax exemption. If they continue their behavior, then you take the more extreme route and start putting people in handcuffs, and you start an extreme audit of the entire church.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't call it extreme.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Shanna.
Okay. So you say for the example we're talking about with forced abortions and slave labor, when something that egregious is happening, why would you just take away their tax exempt status? Like at that.
No, that's a fair point. No, I guess I'm thinking more. Okay, let's not apply that to Scientology.
Okay.
No, let's just go ahead and arrest everyone in that organization and get it over with. I guess maybe the more applicable example to my point is the Catholic cover-up. So a specific diocese is meddling and not taking specific and swift action on the issue of child rape. And maybe these issues are in the past and they've already been mostly resolved, but these priests are just still in the clergy. You take the middle of the ground step, remove the tax exemption. Later on, you take the more extreme notion of just breaking up the entire institution. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think as an overarching statement, I'll always have a problem with financially punishing groups for crimes of the individual. And I think historically, any massive group, like the entirety of a group, so let's say the
Nazi
order of the,
Party.
Well, not them, but the Order of the Sea or whatever. Yeah, the Order of the Sea. Like, so groups like that collectively have some sort of criminal act in mind have historically been disbanded. I mean, like David Koresh tried to be disbanded, but I think that the government usually takes a really active role in taking away massive groups that collectively try to commit crimes, to harm children, to infiltrate government, and that when these minority groups do it, I don't think it's fair or particularly right to punish the entirety of the group altogether.
I would like to make one point. You know, the Scientologists are obviously assholes. But, you know, and obviously they're taking advantage of the system. But the separation of church and state sure, it does allow groups like the Scientologists to exist, but it would be a greater evil for the government to get greatly involved, more involved in religious organizations, in my opinion.
Interesting debate, guys, about tax-exempt status in religious organizations. Let's go ahead and do Assholes of the Week. Let's move on to our Assholes of the Week, a weekly nomination by each of the members of the panel on who they think should be lambasted for bad behavior. Alternatively, you can have your Vindicator of the Week, someone who should be praised for their great behavior. Would anyone like to go first? Joseph.
Okay, my Assholes of the Week. That's assholes plural. It's the UN's top human rights body.
Woo, they, assholes.
Such member countries with sterling human rights records, such as Cuba, Syria, Iran, North Korea, Sudan, China, Venezuela, Bolivia, and Nicaragua, and other members of the Legion of Doom, got together and passed a resolution granting them the right to peace. What this basically means is they have the right to resist against foreign occupation, which is the normal excuse they give when they gun down their own citizens in the street. Interesting note about this is that there were 34 countries voting in favor, included the ones I listed. The only country to vote no was the United States. Countries to abstain were Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, Hungary, India, Italy, Moldova, Norway, Poland, Romania, Spain, and Switzerland. So it's basically all the dictators got together and said and went through the UN and basically voted themselves the right to kill their own citizens.
Woo!
Woo!
Dicks. All right.
I'll go next.
Brian.
Okay, so recently there have been contract disputes between DirecTV and Viacom, a company that owns and runs TV channels such as Nickelodeon, MTV, Comedy Central, etc. And so these contract disputes have gotten to a fever pitch, so to speak. And so DirecTV has blocked all of its viewers from viewing these channels. And so what we're seeing is millions of children that are home on summer vacation woke up today, Saturday morning, July the 14th, and they could not watch SpongeBob. And that's why DirecTV is my asshole of the week.
Also, AMC.
They blocked BET.
AMC, too.
Yeah, AMC and BET. Which, if I can't watch Tila Tequila get drunk and pick a boyfriend, then what the hell am I doing with my life?
What about The Walking Dead? Like, seriously. That or Breaking Bad,
but Tila Tequila, but BET, but Tila.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Cameron, would you like to go next?
I hope this doesn't sound too contradictory to myself earlier, but my asshole of the week is Joe Paterno and the entire Penn State athletic directory, or department, I guess you would say. An eight month inquiry led by former FBI director Louis Freeh about Jason Dusky's child abuse was released Thursday, and it basically said that Joe Pa and the rest of the athletic department, but the athletic director and a few others in the department knew about the incidents even in 1998 before the 2001 incident that Mike McCreary told Joe Paterno about. So really, Joe Pa knew about the whole time, and it's... To me, it's extremely deplorable because he willingly let people hold him to a high standard, knowing that he was hiding child abuse and letting it happen. So That's why Joe Pa specifically, I am considering the asshole of the week, but the athletic department in general. So, yeah, well, not only that, let me just add one more thing that I had written down. There was a few emails being sent back from Joe Pa, well, not Joe Pa, but the athletic director and somebody in the athletic department saying that they needed to treat Sandusky, but they wouldn't call him by name. They'd call him the suspect humanely within the situation. So it's just deplorable that they thought they should treat him with humanity and not these children that were abused in showers with on Penn State property. So it's
I think, yeah.
Go ahead, yeah.
I was going to say, I'll go next since Shanna has a vindicator, if I'm not mistaken. So my asshole nominee of the week is Mohamed Shawabka. Mohamed is a Jordanian or a Jordanian politician who decided to participate in a TV debate with someone of the opposite party. Now, the debate got a little heated, and Mohamed's opponent called him a mafia thief, at which point Mr. Shawabka pulled a gun out in the middle of live television and pointed it at the head of his opponent. Now, no shots were fired, no one was actually injured, but I guess it makes you appreciate a little bit the American political system. For one, for myself, I just think this is totally uncalled for. First of all, being called a mafia thief is the most badass insult one could ever receive. It's kind of like being called a Western outlaw, a rough rider, a lawless gangster, or a suave and sexy cartel of collectible Pez candy dispensers. I just think it's excellent. And I think that to take this and pull out a gun over being called something badass is justification for being the asshole of the week.
I don't know. I think this is how democracy should work. I mean, I think we would all benefit from such lively discussion, people caring so much about the politics.
Yeah, I remember when George Washington pulled out a saber and stabbed a man at the Constitutional Convention who was also going to be nominated for president. I mean, that really expedited the process.
That actually happened, or are you pulling
No.
Wow, Justin.
No.
Wow.
No.
Shanna, you have a Vindicator of the Week.
I do. My Vindicator of the Week is Google for their Legalize Love campaign. Google has stepped up its activism on gay rights issues in nations with anti-homosexuality laws on the books. The company announced last Saturday that they kicked off the Legalize Love campaign. The campaign doesn't just focus on the United States, but it also focuses on countries like Singapore, where certain activities are illegal, and Poland, which has no recognition of same-sex couples at all. A Fortune 500 company, Google has been recognized as one of the best places to work in the United States because they offer benefits to same-sex couples and have great anti-discrimination policies, and the human rights campaign fully endorses them on all issues. That's why they are my Vindicator of the Week.
I really want a rainbow Oreo.
Me
I know that's slightly off topic, but that looks delicious. I don't care what anyone says. Cameron, can I get a second on Shanna's nomination for Vindicator of the Week?
I will second that.
Are there any objections to Shanna's Vindicator of the Week?
I guess it doesn't really bother me all that much, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's the only Vindicator of the Week, so I think you win by default.
Consent. Oh yeah.
Yes, by default and or unanimous consent, Shanna's Vindicator of the Week stands. Yay, so go Google, and I think that Google might be gay, but I don't want to spread rumors around.
I still use AOL search.
Yeah, AOL. Dude,
that's it.
I want to like get a collection of the CDs of AOL online that they used to hand out at grocery stores.
Oh,
stores.
Yeah.
Like, create a piece of art. All right, well, I guess we'll go around and take a vote on who our asshole of the week should be. I'll vote first. I would go with the UN Council, the UN Human Rights Council or whatever it was, but it doesn't surprise me necessarily that dictators are voting to be dictators. What just makes me really, really angry and what just drives me absolutely nuts is the Joe Paterno athletic direction cover-up. It blindingly infuriates me that our culture is so obsessed with football and that colleges hold their athletic programs in such high esteem and put it on such a pedestal that the oral and anal rape of children can be overlooked for a sport.
The thing about it is Joe Paul had so much power. He was just the head coach, but he had power over the athletic director because of his stance within the Penn State system. And that's why I put it mostly on Joe Paul. And he chose legacy, or not legacy, but legacy over, well, I guess legacy. Legacy over what's right. And he gambled everything and lost. So
yeah, it's just total trash. Shanna, who's your vote for asshole?
Oh, I already voted before you even said anything, but I went with the Paterno thing too. I'm a huge victims' right activist, and it's absolutely awful to know that places of higher education where theoretically you should be safe to, like, explore who you are and to learn about the world was tainted and destroyed by criminals and then covered up because of football. It drives me crazy.
This is so ridiculous. And the fact that there's still students at Penn State that are defending the organization. It's just, how dumb can you be? Brian, who's your, we're all, this is supposed to be lighthearted and we're all just really angry.
Yeah.
Just really mad about it.
It is what it is.
I'm going to go with Muhammad Shabalaha Balaha, Will's guy, just because... Yeah.
That's actually a really accurate pronunciation.
That's actually how it's spoken in the native tongue.
Exactly.
I had no idea that you were so articulate.
Yeah, you know.
Don't mispronounce it, I'll pull a gun on you.
All right, Mafia
Joseph,
boss.
Your vote.
Oh, I'm yawning. Okay. man. Well, you know, I don't view Muhammad Chabala blah 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 as being an asshole, because I just find
terrible.
That funny.
And I find that racist.
So insensitive.
He just doesn't know how to take a compliment.
He just doesn't know how to express himself without violence. I mean, that's a personal fault. But I mean, anyway, I think I would have to go with Joe Paterno. Will, Shanna, you said it better than I could, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Let's just turn into a circle jerk. But.
All right. Well, we officially have a majority, but I'll let Cameron cast his vote because every vote matters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Do you have an ID?
You better vote for SpongeBob.
Well, I
yeah,
mean,
actually,
I
let's see some identification.
I'm sorry, I'm illegal. So.
And your skin is a little darker, so we're just going to go ahead and exclude you.
Yeah, I mean,
vote.
Right?
No, I'm kidding.
Do you have an ID, Cameron?
How many jelly beans
many
are in this jar?
How many times am I going to have to answer the same question? I do not have an ID. I am illegal and proud of it. And
his name's... His name's not Cameron Turner.
I'm going to have to vote for the UN.
DirecTV.
I guess. Oh, no. You're. Ooh. Oh, my God. You're right. DirecTV. I forgot about that one. I'm
Woo!
Sorry. I am all about The Walking Dead and the fact that I may not be able to watch it because I don't know what my provider is, so I will have to find that out soon.
Indeed. So by a vote of 3-1-1, we now have our asshole of the week. Joe Paterno and the athletic program at Penn State.
Woo-hoo!
Let's subject him to molestation. No, okay.
Oh, God.
No, just kidding. I would never touch that man. All right. Well, that concludes our show for the week of June 16th. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to our panel. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at the Three-Sided Coin. Send any feedback to the Three-Sided Coin News at gmail.com.